And welcome, everybody, to Off the Hook Overtime, where you can be part of the conversation and call us, and where we can continue our discussion. Kyle, did you make it over okay?
Indeed, I did.
All right. Rob, Gila, you here? No? Don't hear you. I see you talking, but I'm not hearing anything. So right away, we have an issue. I have the right buttons up. Is there a problem with the levels? How about you, Alex?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
So, Rob and Gila, we hear Alex. We don't hear Rob and Gila for some reason. Yeah. Unless you're... There you go.
Sorry. It was a tech issue on our end.
It was a button you didn't press. That's what that was.
Our microphone is muted.
Uh-huh. And David Green is still with us from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. David, is this by choice or are you unable to disconnect?
Entirely by choice.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being a part of this and for all that you do out there.
Sorry to jump in, but we do not seem to be going on YouTube.
We're not going on YouTube. Boy, this is we're just doing so well, aren't we?
It has not yet started.
Okay. We hit all
and
the right
it says
buttons.
Going live in 64 minutes.
64 minutes? No, we said 8 p.m. It says it right there, 8 p.m. Well, what kind of show is this that we do?
Okay, now we are live.
Well, wait, what changed? I want to know what changed. I demand answers here, YouTube. What's going on?
Okay, that might have been our fault, too. I refreshed YouTube, and it seems to be cooperating now.
Wait, are you saying only you weren't able to hear us? Everybody else was?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then I'm glad I didn't say what was really on my mind.
We're betting 1,000 this episode.
Well, some people are betting more than others right now. But okay, so continuing what we were discussing, Kyle, is everything okay? Yeah, you're hovering over this console here. I just want to make sure we're all right.
I just wanted to look at those levels while people were speaking to make sure it sounded all right once we were on that tube streaming service.
I see the levels are green, so I think that's a good thing, right? At least when I'm talking, they're green. Someone else has to say something.
Feel free to do the talking.
Uh-huh. Alex has disappeared. Rob, could you just say something so we can check our levels?
I can indeed. Yes. And I apologize for the misunderstanding.
Okay.
And all right, okay. I will accept whatever demerits. Well,
please be quiet now because we have the info we need. All right. Great. Our phone number, 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. That's our telephone number. We'd love to hear from you. And if you have any questions, since David is here from EFF, we have a phone call already, you can ask questions about that. But David, I have to warn you, sometimes our callers talk about all sorts of other things. Sometimes they call us without even listening to the program. I fear that this call might be one of those. Shall we pick it up? Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Whoa.
Sometimes it's a dial tone.
Big setup there.
What happened there? I heard the phone ringing. The phone was ringing, and it was a dial tone. Okay, well.
We did divergent things at the same time.
The phone is ringing again. Maybe you can pick it up quicker, Kyle, that maybe it won't disconnect.
Oh, because I'm the problem.
Maybe you are the problem.
Good
evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Glad you cleared that
up. As we bicker amongst ourselves.
Hello, Emmanuel.
Oh, look, and this is exactly what I was talking about, David. Yes, Rebel, you're guaranteed not to talk about something that's on topic. Are you going to?
All right, I don't know what. All right, I don't know what the podcast just to tune.
You don't know because you haven't been listening.
I don't know if you could call it tune in, but I just kind of listened. I don't know. But anyway.
Maybe we can call it tube in, as is YouTube. Yeah. See, he doesn't even.
I noticed that.
All right, go ahead, Rebel. Floor is yours.
I noticed that radio station. Remember how you used to say that radio stations below 92 are really strange, like religious stations? But I've been noticing some religious stations. I noticed some religious stations that are above 92 now. I mean, you know, in my outside, like in the middle of the country, like
Rebel. If I can just drop in here. Yes, WBAI, for instance, is at 99.5 FM. They're non-commercial. They're above 92. You can have non-commercial stations above 92. You can have religious stations at any frequency. The real crime, in my opinion, is the fact that religious stations can be below 92. And basically act like a commercial station because they are selling a product, but obviously they are not. But they still get a valuable frequency below 92.
And their taxes
below 92. Mm-hmm. That, yeah, And it's selling a product that, like, you hear music below 92, you think it's like pop music or something something good. But it's a religion. It's like, you know, they're talking about, you know.
I just found out what a button does on the board.
If I
press this button, my levels get better, but people can't hear Rebel then. So, I'm going to do is, while Rebel is talking, I'll press that button. While I'm talking, I'll unpress the button. Can you hear me? Folks,
I can hear you.
No, I'm not talking to you.
I can hear
you. Everyone out there.
What
in Skype
if I disconnect
talking.
This?
I don't. I guess we can experiment.
I thought we were having fun.
Yeah, no, it's YouTube. What the hell?
It's a party. Is this a party or what?
We can even cuss now if we want, but it degrades the show.
YouTube now.
It's only YouTube. Yeah. But so that's the deal with frequencies, Rebel. Basically below 92 is supposed to be for non-commercial, and religious stations take advantage of that. It's a real shame.
Right. Yeah. Let's see, what else? There was something else that I wanted to ask, but I don't know. I've been playing with CB radios, different Citizen Band radio. I got a handheld CB radio.
Do you have a handle in the CB world? What do you go by?
Actually, no. I mean, I don't really... over. I mean, you know, CB, you only can talk for a mile or so. So it's not like, you know,
Well, a nickname has to sort of include your method of transport a little bit. It's got to be creative. So think long and hard.
People
about
don't really
that.
Do that anymore. I mean, like, it's
I beg your
really,
pardon.
Really...
You're just insulted.
CB, I'm talking about Citizen. Uh-huh. All you use CB radio.
There are a lot of modulators out there. You know,
yeah, that's true.
It.
I mean, I do. Yeah. But the thing is that you can't talk to the modulators because you don't have the powerful enough radio. If you have only a 3 or 5 watt radio, you can't hear. The people who have 10 and 20 watt radios are not going to be able to hear you. You'll hear them.
It's all about the crowd you roll with, Rebel. And I'm glad you're doing that. I'm glad to hear you're making your presence known on that frequency range.
Yeah. Right. You have any other questions, Rebel, or any other statements to make before we open up the phone lines?
Emmanuel saying something? What?
Oh, he can't hear me. You can't hear me?
Emmanuel saying something?
Wait, how is it he can't hear me, he can hear you? You're right in the same room with the same type of microphone.
I can't hear. I was able to hear Emmanuel before, but I can't hear him very well now.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
So when I press this
sounds
button.
Good.
No, when I press this button, for some reason, it only affects me. It doesn't affect Kyle. And people can't hear Rebel when this button is pressed, but Rebel can hear me. This is what we're dealing with.
I think you need to go back to WBAI.
We don't know where they are. They moved. They didn't tell us.
I mean, you have to go back to WBAI studio where you have the call-ins and better phone-ins. Let's see. What else? Computer terminals. I saw today I was in a place where they had a terminal emulator. It reminded me of like the 90s where they had, you know, Digital Equipment Corporation terminals.
Yeah. Was I supposed to say something, Rebel?
What is that?
You paused. Were you waiting for me to say something? Because if I say something, I have to press a button because otherwise you won't hear me.
Oh, okay. So I'll be like on the CB radio. I'll tell you when you should speak. I was going to say that computer terminals, like there are places that have regular PCs with Windows and all, and you know, but they have a terminal emulator. Is that like an app? Like I guess you connect by way of the internet to a emulator that so like I guess a website that. You know, I guess emulates terminals. I guess is that the way it works? And it looks like an IBM terminal or a Digital Equipment Corporation terminal. Okay, you can speak, Emmanuel.
Yeah, you have to say over, Rebel. Over.
Over.
Was that over? Did you say over? Over.
Yes, over. Or here. What about
copy? Yeah.
How about that?
Say over when you finish, Kyle.
Over.
Okay.
Do you have anything else to say, Rebel? Because you still have the microphone.
Okay. Let's say terminal emulators. It reminds me of like the 90s when I used to play with the computers and all that. Oh, and by the way, speaking of playing with computers, there's a 2600 meeting this Friday. Not this Friday.
No, there
next
is not.
Friday.
There is not. That is incorrect information. It's the first Friday of the month. This is the last Friday of the month. So it's the opposite of the 2600.
Next Friday, there's a 2600 meeting, and I'll be there at the Citicorp. At the Hughes Center. It's the Hughes Center now, not the City Court Center. Okay.
I don't know what that is, but now, people, you have been warned.
I'm done.
You have been warned. Rebel will be at the meeting a week from Friday. Rebel,
you know, I haven't seen you in the. I haven't seen you in the, at all. You haven't. You do you not come to 2600 meetings?
I'm there. I just hide from you.
He's doing that every what? Time. To, like,
I said I just hide from you, but I'm there.
Let's see what else.
It's just not a form that you recognize.
Mm-hmm. Right, Rebel,
should we open up?
Yeah, we're gonna move on to the phone call. So
okay,
it was great
right.
hearing from you.
Okay, I'm done.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Good hearing from you. Good
call
night.
Back.
No, don't tell him that.
No,
he's
no,
gonna
not
call back
tonight,
right now.
But eventually,
he'll take it literally.
We'll hear you again. Never mind.
So you see, David, this is what we were talking about.
What's the phone number?
Yeah. I'm so sorry. Folks, if you have a question for David Green from the EFF or anything about the Supreme Court or, 230, any of that stuff, this is your opportunity to call us. I know only a fraction of the people who listen to the radio listen to YouTube. That's true, but that gives you more of a chance to be heard. 802-321-4225 is our phone number, 802-321-HACK. I got to remember to hit all the right buttons, but we do have a phone call. Go ahead. You're on the air or on YouTube.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good. This is Johnny Fusion again.
How you doing, Johnny Fusion? And where are you calling from?
From Silicon Valley.
Okay. Do you have a question for our guest from the EFF?
I do, but a little bit of background, right? Because, hackers, we get raided, we get arrested, we go to court, right? Like, when I was in Amsterdam, it was right around the time when they finally got around to getting computer crime laws. And I met the first hacker that went to prison, RGB. And when he went to trial, like, they presented all the evidence, and when the judge ruled, it wasn't on all the evidence. He really said, I didn't really understand the trial, but I know you're a computer hacker, and computer hackers do such and such, and because of this, I'm going to send you to prison for a certain amount of time. And a lot of time, like the courts and the juries, they just don't understand the technical stuff that the hackers are being accused of, right? You know, that was like the thing, like what was highly publicized with Mitnick. Like they gave him like technical superpowers that didn't really exist. You know, sentence him based on things of imagination but not based on what he actually did. And so we have different kinds of courts for different areas of law. Like we have family court and traffic court, right? Stuff like that. I'm wondering, would it be even plausible to have like a tech court? Like, is that even within the realm of possibility someday in, like, in a more enlightened society where these very technical cases can be put in front of jurists that have more technical understanding and don't get overwhelmed or get into these realms of fantasy and actually have a technical grounding as well as an understanding of the law?
Yeah, I'm going to leave that to both David and Alex to address.
I can give it a shot, Alex.
Go ahead, David. Yeah.
But it's an interesting idea. I think sort of the trend of courts around the country has actually become less specialized rather than more specialized. I think one of the big obstacles going to be is that there's just tech comes up in so many different areas now that. I think if you would have a tech court, it actually might end up being the vast majority of cases that get filed. You know, there are some courts that at least have, a reputation like the the federal courts, the portion of the Northern District of California that sits in Silicon Valley, you know, that has a reputation for the judges being more savvy. But really, I think what would be a better institutional change is just to really impress upon judges the need to seek out expertise when they lack it themselves. So, I mean, if a judge doesn't have the technological expertise to decide an issue, and it's not being provided by the parties, then judges can ask for experts. They can reach out to experts to file briefs and explain. And I just think that has to, I mean, it's a role that EFF actually plays sometimes, but not as much as we should. I mean, we don't get invited to do so as much as we should. And I think that that's what we should really, I would impress upon the judiciary, is if you don't understand the technology, then find a way to understand it. Because I think the range of expertise, even in a tech court, the range of expertise we require of any single judge would just be, you know, way too much for someone to handle.
Yeah, I can add to that too. I think the another thing to think about too, in terms of the expertise, is that a judge is going to bring to bear on any particular case or motion or issue, it's not just the judge's own mind as well. But you have to realize that the judge also has chambers behind him, and usually within that chambers is going to be a law clerk, usually at least one, and those law clerks are really there to help the judge make that decision, to do a lot of the research, to explain the technology at issue. And these law clerks are generally, you know, top of their class in law school, and it's what you do when you graduate law school and you go you go and clerk for a judge for 1 or 2 years and then go on and do whatever you want. It's a fantastic experience. I wound up having a good fortune of clerking for a federal appellate judge for the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. We were like the Supreme Court of the military, so we had a lot of cases come up in the context of courts-martial and technology on ships and privacy and First Amendment issues that I was able to help my judge understand a bit more, I think. And so I see that as a good thing. But then I like the idea, though, of having some kind of specialized fact finder. Because a jury is just such a crapshoot in terms of the composition of it, who you're going to get. And then both sides tend to weed out most of the smartest players. Anybody who would be considered to be an expertise in technology, if you have a technology case, you probably don't want to have that person on the jury, because they might wind up actually manipulating the jury or running the jury or having more authority than the lawyers about certain issues that are presented. So those people tend to get weeded out in most jury pools, you know, by one side or the other. One side would love to have somebody who's tech savvy, and if that's the case, then the other side is not going to want to have somebody who's tech savvy. So maybe this whole notion, and some countries do have professional fact finders and professional juries, and that's always something I thought, you know, maybe there is room for that in this justice system. I think it would be a welcome addition. Perhaps maybe even for just a small subset of cases, like you suggest, Johnny Fugue.
Yeah, but Alex, if I could just ask, these professional juries in other countries, how do they get appointed, and could they be politicized?
I don't know. I'm not entirely sure. I'd have to look up a bit more of this. You know, I could do some quick Googling and then get back to you in a few minutes. But I'm not entirely sure how they are. How they're chosen or comprised, but I imagine that there's probably some kind of training or certification program that you would go through about, you know, figuring out what's relevant and irrelevant, weighing evidence fairly. I would hope there'd be something like that, and then maybe that just there's a giant pool. That's how I would do it if I were designing something like that. But yeah, I'll get back to you.
Anything else, caller?
Yeah, you know, it's Oh, I was getting some feedback. But it's just like, it seems like so many in government, you know, because, I mean, so many in government are boomers, and they just seem so ill-equipped to even legislate tech issues. I mean, I remember many years back when members of the Loft were testifying in front of a congressional panel and just telling them what hackers were capable of. And the panel was just kind of agog at what was even possible.
And then, like, just like a year or two ago, we had this congressman grilling someone at Facebook over, you know, combating synth studs. They thought it was a smoking gun about teenagers having, you know, these alternate accounts on Instagram. And how do you pronounce, prevent that? You know, and they're just a lot of touch, you know, and they don't know about technology because they're not really users of it. And, I mean, how do we educate the people that are supposedly supposed to regulate this meaningfully, you know, and make these laws, you know, like we have these two cases about Section 230 about the Supreme Court, and like Kagan said, we got 9 justices who are not experts in the internet that potentially change how we're going to use it, you know, and we have, you know, this, I think, an illegitimate court with the way the conservatives packed it. They stole a seat, you know, and they've been itching to visit the issue of Section 230.
What was that, a question?
Well, what do I mean? I guess I pontificated a bit, but like, how do we address these people so out of touch with technology being in control of the legal levers of technology?
You know, I agree with you that we should be concerned that the justices are going to, first of all, there's plenty of 230 and other CFAA and other cases that get litigated where, you know, you read the opinion and it's if they just don't, they have no idea like how anything works, like even on the most basic level, and that you get really bad results. And so we should always be concerned about that. I do think there are some justices on the court now who at least consider themselves to be tech savvy. I don't know if they actually are. And I think others who will really rely on their clerks or on the, you know, there were a ton of amicus briefs filed in these cases. But I do think you definitely run into the hazardry of something like a Supreme Court where there's, you know, it's only 9 justices and some of them can be very old. And so we'll see. I was a bit pleased during the Gonzalez hearing that they did seem to understand the way the internet worked. Like they did understand that those who were protected by 230 had to make a lot of decisions, which isn't like a take for granted realization. Like I think they understood that it would be bad and impractical for them to, you know, to require them to, you know, the internet would be different if they were legally required to review every piece of user content before. So I think they understood that. Again, that's probably not going to get us all the way there. But I was at least pleased that we weren't like, you know, when I started doing internet cases, we were doing things like, you know, explaining what a CD was. You know, I mean, like, it was like that level of, okay, let's educate the court. Like, this is what a URL is. You know, we're at least got past that. But I think the 230 cases don't require too much expertise. But there certainly are some cases. And I think what we really see, I think in the CFAA, the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act cases, where you really see a deficit in sort of understanding what like security research is and why it's beneficial and how people learn about vulnerabilities and systems and things like that. I think that's when we really have to start worrying about the lack of expertise.
Yeah. Hey, I want to go back to that whole professional jury thing that we were talking about for a second. Because I did find some really interesting information. And David, I think you might find this fascinating too, unless you know about this already. I don't know if you do, but it's kind of strange. Because, you know, we're known as a common law country, right? We inherited our legal traditions from the United Kingdom, England in particular, and the common law system. And so, you know, we evolve the law by virtue of these judicial decisions. And the opposite of common law, I guess, would be civil law, where everything is essentially legislated. And those are countries like Poland, Germany, France, you know, places that don't adhere to the English tradition of law, right? And it turns out that civil law countries characteristically, I'm reading an article here, characteristically employ mixed decision-making bodies of lay citizens and law-trained judges to decide cases. So it's a mix of professional jurors, essentially, professional judges, and laypersons who are picked from the community. And it's kind of interesting, too, in that there's a lot of distinctions between how Germany does it, how France does it. There's the German collaborative court model that features a professional judge and two lay persons assessing the situation, so together with the judge. The French collaborative court model also includes professional judges deciding cases with citizens, but the ratio of professional jurors is much greater than that found in the German model. And then you even have this weird court in France that's an appeals court, the Cour d'assises d'appel, that has 12 jurors, three professional jurors, and it's new. This is something that they apparently created recently. It operates entirely by majority rule. And here's what's weird about it, David. They conduct a fresh examination of the evidence in the case on the appeal. In the United States, we don't do that at all. On appeal, we don't look at all at the facts. The facts are essentially set in stone from what happened at trial. In order for any appellate judge to look at a fact and change it on an appeal, it would have to be a clearly erroneous finding, and that almost never happens. So the fact that there's this court of appeal in France that's looking over evidence bit by bit again, that's really kind of fascinating. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the system. I was, as you were talking, so I said, I wonder if they do this in Louisiana, which is our only civil law state in this country. You know, it's interesting. You know, I think the closest thing we have in this country is like some of the grand jury systems where a civil grand jury will be convened, and the idea is to develop expertise. As with everything, the limitation in the U.S. is that we underfund our judicial system so greatly, and we'd have to actually pay these people, you know, to be experts, and we pay people such a pittance to be on juries and be on grand juries that we have to figure out how to do that to actually attract expertise. But I agree, it's a value we should strive for.
Let me just ask our caller if he has any more questions, and we'll move on.
No, I don't. But I've been a member of the EFF for several years. I make a small donation every month. I love the work you do.
Well, thank you so much. We really, really appreciate that. We are an organization that's funded by mostly by a lot of small donors. So I greatly appreciate your contribution and your thanks.
Thanks for your call.
All right. I'll listen next week.
All right. Take care. Actually, that was our fault. Actually, don't listen next week because we're not on next week. Yeah.
Right.
And you know what? I found out that button that Rebel told me I had to press to be heard. He that's not true. That caller could hear me when I didn't press the button. So, yeah. There's that. All right, our phone number. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask if anyone's been around a terminal emulator recently.
A terminal?
Emulator.
Oh, an emulator.
Well, you know, I use the terminal window on my desktop computer fairly regularly, but apart from that, I haven't seen like a dumb terminal in the wild in a very long time.
Well, I'm only asking this because this was what Rebel was going on and on about. It's like itching him to call back.
No, don't.
Like, yeah, antagonizing him. He definitely wants to answer that question.
No, 802-321-4225 is the number for everybody but Rebel. 802-321-HACK. Go ahead, Gila.
Oh, no, I was just, Alex, please don't do that. But the other thing I was thinking, and I thought this when the previous caller was on the phone, was, you know, it tech is not the only field in which judges decide they have expertise in a field they know nothing about, says your friendly local woman. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
Okay. Now, I know we were having some issues with the phone line, Kyle. Can you just give me a dial tone? I'm just going to see if we have a problem on our end. Right, so we have that. I'm going to try and get a good level there. If I go higher than this, it starts distorting. So this is going to be... Okay, that's good. That's good. Thank you for that.
Just don't try to boost people. If they're low, just let them
you
talk.
You saw my
the
hands.
The telephone keeps ringing.
I don't want to tell you how to answer a phone, but...
I wasn't touching
just
anything.
Just let them sizzle at whatever...
And the audio was changing on its own.
Okay.
With me not touching a thing. So it wasn't me. All right, 802-321-4225. If you want to call us and say your piece, this is your chance. We won't be on for another 2 weeks.
And we'll try not to butcher your signal.
Well, we're just not going to touch it and see what happens. It's in God's hands now. And, of course, if we don't get phone calls, we're going to sign off because that's what we do. We run out of things to talk about. Yes, Gila.
Well, we were having a discussion during the show to overtime changeover here at our house. And my question is, what do we think the internet equivalent of a 7-second delay would be?
Why would it? What do you mean? Like a pause button on publishing? Is that like time to live?
Yeah, because when we're on the radio, the reason we're here right now is because of the FCC,
right?
Because we don't have a 7-second delay and right. We can't cut people off if they say something that would get us in trouble with the FCC. If 2:30 falls, is what would be the equivalent of a 7-second delay button for the internet? That was my question.
Yeah, it would be much longer than 7 seconds.
Yeah.
I do think one of the most practical consequences of, you know, of really sort of increasing the possibility of liability would just be but you're gonna have two things. One, they have to review everything before it posts. That's just gonna really slow down. I mean, it's almost gonna make things unusable, right? I mean, you couldn't post anything that was timely. You as a user who were relying on other services couldn't post anything that was timely. So your birthday photos on Facebook would, you know, show up a week later. Maybe a week would be good turnaround. Anyway, it would just slow things down just because it's going to take a ton of time to review the volume of content, or it would be reviewed by really, really, really bad, you know, automated systems that would do a really bad job of doing it. The other thing that could happen, which I think a lot of the people really hate Section 230 are pushing for, is that you'd have this, what they call a knowledge-based scheme, where, like, you know, they could publish something, but as soon as somebody told them that it was bad, they'd have to, you know, look and investigate and take it down, right? And so this would be like, you know, you don't get to do this on the radio. You don't get to be like, you say something and because it's live. So you have to do the 7-second delay. But, you know, for the non-live stuff, you know, in some situations they're not liable unless they knew it was bad or knew it was illegal. And so we create this knowledge-based system. That's what a lot of the most prominent 230 opponents are pushing for. And then what we've seen that gets is you just get this big system of people just start complaining about everything, right? You know, it's like, I don't like that content, so I'm going to send, you know, YouTube a letter and say that's illegal. And now YouTube has to either take it down or investigate and then be confident that it's legal and leave it back up, right? And maybe YouTube wants to spend that money, but a lot of other places aren't going to do it. They're just going to take stuff down. And so I think that's what the 7-second delay will look like if we go that way. Either it'll be this huge delay where it's unusable, people will stop doing user-generated content, or we're going to have this massive, like, you know, people sending abusive notices. And, of course, like, the people who are going to suffer from that are, like, going to be traditionally marginalized speakers, everyone who arouses animosity and opposition from the comfortable majority.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, as we're streaming now on YouTube, we're users of YouTube generating content. And if one of us says something right now that freaks somebody out there, YouTube probably isn't going to get sued themselves over what we generate. that person's own ISP will probably not be open to lawsuits for showing that person our content. And, you know, basically all the middlemen, all the companies that control bits of the internet that the signal goes through from A to B, they're just passing it along. And in a legal sense, that is known. And I think that's kind of what is at risk here. I don't think there could be an equivalent to a 7 second delay for the internet, especially for like things like what we're doing now.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely.
Even if there were, and this is a question I have for David, and I always have this question. What's to stop everybody from just going to a different country, online, of course, just routing through Iceland or Norway or any country that doesn't have the same laws? How do you address that?
Yeah, I mean, you could see that happening. The laws tend to be less protective in those countries. So I don't know that you're going to get a better situation, but we've certainly seen when there have been sort of crackdowns in American law on certain content sexual content being the big example under U.S. law, you know, that people want to use services, just stop using U.S. services. So I think you could see that. This of course is not just an issue that like U.S. regulators are looking at. It's also, frankly, I can't imagine the U.S. Supreme Court doing something worse than what the U.K. government is going to do with the online safety bill it's trying to pass. I don't know if there's a haven out there that's going to give a better situation.
Can you tell us something about that U.K.?
Oh, gosh, let me refer you to EFF.org to read more about it. Actually, or there's a lot of other, especially some of our colleague organizations in the UK, such as Article 19. Go to Article19.org. We'll have a lot of information. But it's really a sort of very massive scheme to try and liability scheme to address a whole variety of online harms, the stuff that like harms children as well as all the stuff that harms other people. And it's very, very punitive. And it's still being debated. It's outlines or the contours are still being outlined, but it's hard to imagine how any company can actually comply with at least what some of the drafts say they'd be required to comply with.
Wow. Article19.org, that's a British organization?
It is, yes.
Okay. I hadn't heard of them before, so that's good. Okay, our phone number, 802-321-4225. We're just going to give it another couple of minutes. If we don't hear from people, we are going to sign off. Again, our email address, oth@2600.com. We love hearing from our listeners, so please write us with whatever is on your mind, critical or questions or suggestions or anything like that. Rob, go ahead.
And just while we got a minute, I will mention that the 2600 meetings do happen all over the world next week, which is the first Friday of the month. And here in New York City, the 2600 meeting will also feature a small memorial gathering for our departed friend Jim Red Balaclava, who was part of this program for many years.
Right. And those meetings take place, as Rob said, first Friday of every month. That one at the, I believe the building is still called the Citigroup building. It's the one with the slanty roof and 53rd Street and 3rd Avenue. Starts around 5 p.m. But meetings also take place all around the world. And you can go to 2600.com/meetings to find out where they are and also to find out how to start one near you. All right. Phone lines are not exactly ringing off the hook. So, folks, I'm going to give everybody an opportunity to say whatever is on their mind before we sign off.
What's on our mind?
Or perhaps we have nothing on our minds.
Just thank you to everyone out there who's been giving us feedback on our signal quality and things like that and volume issues. Yes, we're working on all of it, as you've heard.
And we have a phone call. Absolutely. So I'm going to interrupt the people that we don't have a phone call. We had a phone call. That's what happens if we don't have a phone call. what were you saying, Kyle?
Nothing.
It's a nightmare for Kyle. He has to handle all the technical issues here. Okay. So, Gila, you were going to say something? Go ahead.
I just wanted to say thank you, David, for not only being with us on the air, but staying with us on overtime. It's, I mean, I always enjoy when we have guests from the EFF, but this has been a lot of fun. Thank you.
And thank you. I've enjoyed hanging out with the 2600 folks. It's been a while since I've immersed myself in 2600. So thank you for having me.
Awesome. Alex, anything?
Yeah, I just second that. I think it's fantastic for you to join David and be so generous with your expertise tonight. We really very much appreciate it. And we hope it's been a warm welcome to WBAI, because we'd like to have you back soon.
Yes, absolutely. Well, David, thank you so much. Go ahead. Say what's on your mind.
No, I come back anytime, right?
Great.
Whenever Johnny Carson says that, right? I'll have it back anytime.
I'm sure there'll be plenty of legal challenges to discuss in future weeks and months.
Yeah, we'll want to check back with you, certainly, for updates and any developments in this area, for sure.
Regarding the Supreme Court cases that we talked about earlier, do you expect some sort of decision on that soon, or is that going to take a while?
If I had to guess, it would be the end of June. So they're supposed to issue all their opinions by the end of June. It's pretty late in the term to hear cases, to hear arguments. So even if this wasn't hard cases, I don't think we'll hear anything before mid to end of June.
Is there an advantage to having them hear multiple cases so that they don't hear other cases that could really dismantle our democracy, which has been happening? Like if we had done this last year,
let's hope so. Yeah, right? Let's hope there's some advantage.
Maybe Roe versus Wade would still be around if we had just gotten a few more of these cases to take up their time. What do you think, Kyle? Should we take that call? You want to take that call? All right, we have a last minute call. Good evening. You're on Off the Cuff Overtime.
Yeah. Hello.
Hi, where are you calling from?
Yeah, hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Can you hear me?
Oh, I hear you now. Yeah, your audio is just horrible in this program today. It's really bad.
Yeah, there's something going on. I'm not sure what it is. I'm sorry to hear that. We might use our local recording to replace what is on YouTube if it's really bad. But where are you calling from?
I'm in Mississippi today. I'm in Jackson, Mississippi. I'm from New Jersey, but I'm in Mississippi.
I see.
And I had a question, just a general question. It's not really a tech-related question, but there's a case going on right now in Jackson, Mississippi. I'm not sure if your legal people have heard of it. It's basically a case where they want to, as I understand it, they want to have these special laws, carve out these special laws for the white areas in the city. If you go online, you'll see it anyway. But and the mayor of the city is suing the courts. Basically, they want to just carve out a section of the city, and that section would be, they'll have their own judges and their own laws and their own stuff.
Did you
and
say
that section is like the white areas?
The white area. Can I just ask one more question? What year are you calling from?
This is 2023.
Well, that's right. Well, this is really happening. Now, I mean, I know it's Mississippi, but still.
If you go online, you Google it, you'll see what I'm talking about. Just Google, like, Jackson, Mississippi laws or whatever, you know, and this is actually really happening right now. And they're saying exactly what you just said, that this is racist and this and that. And I don't know. It's just, I just thought it was interesting. I thought maybe any one of your legal guys have heard of it.
Have you been talking about it? Has it been a talk of the town, as it were, while you're traveling there? What have people been saying?
Yeah, it's like all over the news. It's like a big story here, you know? The mayor is involved, and the mayor is, mayor's trying to sue the city, and the mayor's saying it's a racist thing and all this kind of stuff.
All right, Alex, David, have you heard anything about this at all?
I think maybe. Tell me, caller, if this is right. There's an article here that I'm seeing from the New York Times, I think it was a couple of days ago, titled "In Mississippi's Capital, Old Racial Divides Take New Forms," a plan by Republican lawmakers to set up a new court system served by a state-run police force for parts of mainly black Jackson has become a flashpoint for racial and political divisions. Would that be right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
That's wow. Right? Yeah. So, yeah, I guess legislators approved a bill that would establish a separate court system for about one-fifth of Jackson. That's run by state-appointed judges and served by a police force that currently patrols the area around Mississippi government buildings. Seems kind of strange, right? Yeah.
Well, we're literally hearing about this for the first time, so thanks for bringing it to our attention. This seems unbelievable.
I have one other thought before we go. I had another question. How come WBA, why don't they just charge commercials, just charge people fees for, like, you know, like any other radio station? Why do they just keep, you know, well, instead of...
Okay, the reason for that is quite simple. If, let's say, we were sponsored by Verizon, we would not be able to criticize Verizon during our program because, you know, they're paying for the program. So, why, you know, they would be very upset if we said something critical of them. We would not be able to be honest anymore. The whole texture of the radio station would change by having just listener contributions fund the station. We're only answerable to our listeners. And that's pretty much what non-commercial radio is. National Public Radio has done that less and less. You will hear things like commercials on NPR stations.
Or a lot of foundations and underwriting organizations that are sometimes familiar groups of names and families, like the Ford Foundation and so forth. They're big funds that can... put up a lot of capital for NPR such that they don't have to appeal as much to or have as many subscribers necessarily in any one market.
I mean, let me just bounce this back to you. There are a lot of commercial radio stations on the dial. If you could tune to any one of those and find the kind of content you hear on WBAI, I would be amazed. And that's why we don't have commercials.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Have a great night.
All right. Stay safe down there, please. Take care. And wow, that's quite a story. Alex, you still seem kind of stunned reading whatever it is you're reading over there.
Yeah, it's a crazy story. It really is. And
how is it not headline news everywhere? I don't get that.
I don't know. I didn't catch this one. I'm embarrassed to say.
Okay.
There was this great quote. It said after the legislature passed this, the city's black Democratic mayor, I think the head says, might say it, Chakwe Antar Lumumba, minced no words after the House vote. And he said, some of the other legislators, I was surprised that they came half-dressed because they forgot to wear their hoods.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty, that's there.
And, you know, I'm afraid to ask this, but you said the black Democratic mayor, does that mean now there's a white Republican mayor as well? how much are they redoing the system where they regain control?
Yeah, it's really crazy. It's definitely something you should be watching and reading up on.
All right. Rob, did you have something? No, just scratching? Okay. well, I think we're going to do it for tonight because we got one more call, and now I think it's time to go.
Yes, we'll disassemble all of the equipment and reassemble it in a new form. Yeah, it'll rise like a phoenix from the ashes.
I'm sorry about the levels, but it's an old board.
We're a bit crispy.
If anyone has a new soundboard they'd like to donate to us, well, we'll certainly take that into consideration. But thank you, everybody, for listening. Thanks for writing to us. Again, email address oth@2600.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks on BAI and here on YouTube. David, I want to thank you again for joining us and lending your expertise from the EFF, and we'll certainly be in touch in the future. All right. Good night, everybody.